You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
It's the final stretch of 2022, and HRN needs your help. Our goal for the winter membership drive is to raise $30,000. Become an HRN member with a donation of any amount at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Through creative, educational reporting, storytelling, and live events, HRN delivers thought-provoking exchanges about the real issues affecting our global food system. Your donation also supports our internship program, an essential part of HRN's work that educates the next generation of journalists. Donate at the $90 level before December 31st, and you'll receive a limited-release HRN t-shirt designed exclusively for HRN members by artist Chema Scandal. When you become an HRN member at any level, you'll be the first to know about special events and get news updates created only for food radio insiders. Help us meet our end-of-year fundraising goal with your tax-deductible donation. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. and become a member today.
I'm Lou Bang.
I'm Cha Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the award-winning, critically acclaimed podcast that helps gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
Yes, and today we're talking about, I think we've touched upon this a few times, Lou.
Have we?
Yeah, I think we... I mean, we've complained before about this.
I don't know about complaining about it. So we got a note from one of our road trippers asking about it, Java.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua Perez, name checked one of our three listeners, Java. Joshua Perez asked, how does the agave nectar industry affect the agave population and the environment?
That's tremendously interesting because
it's so broad too.
Why?
Well, because that's, to me, how does it affect the agave population? Well, okay, so now you're talking about what kind of agave is it, where is it grown, all of this stuff, right? And then you're talking about the environment. I mean, that's a lot to talk about.
Well, yes, but I think the quick, easy answer is, how are people making agave syrup? Like, which are the industries that are related to agave syrup and how they're treating this material, right? And that gives you a little bit of the scale of it. Are we consuming mostly artisanal agave syrup when we go to the Whole Foods and buy a bottle of it? Or is mostly intensively industrial?
Boy, that's really... It's interesting the way you framed that, because I would actually... Look, I don't know what the truth of it is, but I think that, in fact, even the agave syrup, the agave nectar that you see at Whole Foods is industrially made.
Yes, actually, if we can think about all our trips, it was just until recently that we did find a few families that are starting, I wouldn't say they're like very well-established businesses, but they're starting to maybe speculate about when artisanally made agave syrup will be. But
right.
But as you say, I will do claim that 99.9% of everything that you'll find in the market today was made using a diffuser.
Right. Okay. So let's back up from that, right? So what is agave nectar? What is agave syrup, right?
I like to say that it's like the pre-tequila.
It's the pre-tequila.
or pre-mezcal.
Kind of, sort of. But like, so my understanding of it is like it's the sugar, but it's been processed, so it's not really pre, right?
Well, in the I say pre because that will be those sugars will be the sugars you will be using for fermentation and then for separating the alcohol from water. So in the sense, is the potential. I mean, there's even distilleries that use agave nectar to then make tequila or mezcal or agave spirits, right?
Well, at least to make agave spirits, I don't know of anybody making a certified tequila that's going from nectar.
Is that even possible?
What?
to use agave nectar and do a certified tequila?
Does that? Yeah, of course it would be. Yeah, no, that would be acceptable under the gnome.
Okay.
As long as the sugars come from agave, I guess it doesn't matter what form they take. Are you talking about, clearly it's possible to do because we know people.
We're just getting in a rabbit hole. It doesn't serve any of the purposes of this episode.
But I think the point that you're getting at is that you've got the vast majority of agave nectar, if not 100% of the agave nectar that's on the market, at least in the USA. I don't know about the rest of the world, but at least in the USA. Comes from monoculture Blue Weber agave, and it's tied to the tequila industry, and it tends to be made using that diffuser, that industrial process of shredding the raw agave and hitting it with enzymes. Acids, not enzymes? Is that a different thing?
Yes, that's a different thing. They're basically trying to break the sugars with heat. It doesn't necessarily have to use the acid. That's specific design of diffuser, in my understanding. Mm-hmm. But yes, it goes through the diffuser.
So let's stop there for a second, right? To speak very specifically to Joshua's question, how is that affecting the agave population? You know, there was a ban on agave nectar amongst some bartenders in the USA because they felt like the agave should be used to make spirits, used to make tequila instead of nectar.
Wait, really? But that is slightly confounding to me because I think that a bunch of the people that I've met in the craft cocktail context, they're actually extremely interested in the agave syrup because they can use it as a sweetening agent that has easier conversation with some of the other agave products that they have at hand.
I get what you're saying.
This is slightly surprising to me because what is more important? For me, to sweeten something, it's one of the basis of civilization, right? Like sweeteners have been such a big important part of every civilization if you explore the world, and alcohol too. So for me, they're in the same level or the same level of importance, if you wish.
Sure, okay. Cool. But no, I'm telling you, there absolutely was a ban amongst some, you can't say
people,
everybody.
Sure, yeah.
It was more than 10 people. But, you know, it's impossible to say it was everybody. Clearly it wasn't. But no, there was a very big movement. I'm guessing it was maybe...
On Facebook?
This was maybe 8-9 years ago that was the big movement. And the idea that somehow... it was a moral choice to use Blue Weber monoculture agave for agave nectar versus tequila seems odd to me, but that's the reality of things. Okay. I think that you and I aren't going to disagree on whether or not it's immoral to use it for agave nectar over tequila, right?
And I think I did not understand the question.
If
you are using the same agricultural practices, if you're using almost the same technique to transform that raw material into something, be it tequila, agave nectar, or whatever other product that you can imagine or that we might create in the future, facial creams, UV protector, I don't care. If you're using the same practices to do one or the other, they're having the same impact on the environment, correct?
Yeah, it would seem to me, for sure.
All right.
And the idea that that you might be depleting the population of agave that could be used to make tequila, like if you can use it to make tequila that's going to sell for more money, then, that's the choice of the farmer. I don't see that as a morals choice. I see that as a business choice.
Okay, so if we both agree on that, we will not spend more time of that because agreeing is boring. Then what else do we have on the plate of this?
Right. Well, I think it goes back to what you were saying about the fact that there's this other way to make agave nectar that we ran across on our recent trip through Hidalgo.
And Tlaxcala. Correct. And we're in October, right? October 2022.
Yes.
And we've been touring the US of A, the southeast side of the US of A for the last week. And with us, we had a plastic bottle with what we're calling, or you're starting to call, heritage agave syrup. Roy,
mainly,
because
it makes me laugh.
I want some serious sounds.
Heritage agave syrup.
Correct. And this, I mean, we're making fun of it, but it was tremendously exciting to me because we went into this, I will say, I'm using the word tour a lot, but I guess that's what we do, road trip, tours, whatever. And we went to these people that are mostly pulque makers, but they acknowledge that pulque is a tremendously elusive drink. And it has very compact shelf life, though it's never going to be on the shelf. And they're trying to do secondary products in order to have stuff that it's more long-lived. And amongst one of these products that they're starting to do is to take the agua miel, the honey water. We explained this a few times in other episodes, honey water, so I'm not going to try to go into that.
Nah, I don't go into it.
Yeah, I won't delve into
that. If you don't know about it, look up one of the other pulque episodes.
Yeah, but like agua miel, honey water, they're going to be collecting that. And honey water, again, I always say it's one of the proofs that God loves us. And it has a very amazing...
Or Maya Well.
Or whoever is up there, down there, we don't know. It has the perfect combination or the perfect ratio of water versus sugars in order to make it a very friendly to yeast. It's made to ferment. It's made to make alcohol. But if you evaporate a bunch of the water that is available there, you're going to make it extremely sweet. You're making a nectar, a honey, a denser honey.
A syrup.
A syrup. And that is not going to be prompt to ferment as easily because yeasts are very picky entities. So if there's too much sugar, they're going to get an OD. They're going to get really fat really fast, and they won't be able to create alcohol. So this is what these guys are doing in a nutshell.
Right. And so the idea that there's this other industry, and industry feels like too big a word for what we've seen, but this other potential, I guess, for agave nectar that, you know, when we were looking at it, was coming from, well, I was going to say almost exclusively Salmianas, but I don't think that's true, was it?
No, yes.
It was?
It was.
Okay.
Exclusively different varietals.
Mm-hmm.
Salmiana, Salmiana Crassispina, Salmiana Variedad Salmiana, and I'm missing like two or three, but sure.
But you could also get it from Inakinans and all these other...
Well, Inakinans, yes. Yeah. Tepesta, well, Marmoratas,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So all these other agaves that have been used to make pulque, if they can make pulque, clearly they can make agua miel. If they can make agua miel, clearly you can make syrup.
Yes. And... I mean, I know we're having this conversation in the morning. You hate talking about flavor, but oh Lord, this thing is delicious. Well, this thing is amazing.
It is. And to me, the thing that I found interesting is in the same way that you and I can taste through a bunch of different agave spirits or taste through a bunch of pulques that are made from different agaves by different people, you get these different flavors. It was the same thing with the syrups, which was interesting to me because I think of syrup as being generally a homogeneous thing. They all taste kind of the same.
Mm. And this one really, really has complexity to it. And we actually had two different syrups that we collected in two different tinacales. Three different syrups. Oh, Gaspareña, La Loba, and which other?
Then the one that I didn't go in because we were pretending I had explosive diarrhea.
Oh, they also gave us a syrup.
Yeah.
Los Tuzos.
Wow. With the little rabbit on the label. That's all I can remember.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Wow. Okay, so we have enough for an actual tasting. That's great. I had forgotten about that. It's been a whirlwind lately. So I hadn't had the chance to really look into our bounties.
But you know, but I would also say, so you just picked up 150 liters or something of the syrup, right?
Yes. Well, I
From one family.
From La Gaspareña, yes, correct.
And didn't you tell me that they had separated it by batch?
Yes. sorry. Man, that was such a happy moment for me. So they arrived to where we now have the sacred warehouse, Sacred Agave Roche warehouse, which its location shall not be disclosed due to security. I mean, I will go and try to rough that warehouse myself. But they told me, it's like, okay, here's your, I can't remember how many hundreds of, like 100 change liters. And like, but be very careful not to mix them. Because this was made during the winter and this was made during the summer. And the winter is more güero. It's a little bit lighter in color. And the other one is darker. And it's like honey. It's like honey of different seasons.
And you tasted the two of them, yeah?
Yes. I mean, both are extremely delicious. My palate is still not to the point where I can describe them with fluency, but they are distinct. You can
there you go, distinct and delicious. That's all I care about.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, to get back to Joshua's question though, like, okay, let's talk about the environment, right? And if what, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to approach environmental issues, but one of them is, you know, monocultures aren't good. Monocultures can collapse. Monocultures, particularly when you're talking about Jalisco and Blue Weber, start wiping out all of these
and
diverse
Michoacán, that's the thing is Jalisco and Michoacán in that monoculture of Blue Weber.
Right.
But
you're talking about wiping out all of the diversity of plants, not just agave, but all the other plants that would have grown on those wild lands until they became Blue Weber monoculture
and
farms.
Most likely they're not using intensive. I mean, there's some agave nectars that I've seen that are created as organic, but
I wonder A, about the certification. B, is it just organic in terms of how the agave was grown versus how it was processed? Like, I got a lot of questions. Is it, there's no legal definition of agave nectar. There's no gnome that I know of. So is it really 100% agave? Did they maybe supplement with another kind of syrup?
Yeah. And I mean, and talking the agricultural practices, I mean, one part is the monoculture. The other one is using aggressive amounts of fertilizers, pesticides, and whatnot. That when you're doing something at that scale, there's a good chance that that's part of the equation. And
whereas when you go to these families,
yeah, it's a whole different world.
Tiny scale.
Oh man, it was so exciting to be with them because I was really able to contemplate how ignorant I am and just how vast these traditions that we're trying to map are. And just the fact that they just tradition the way they plant, they leave huge highways in the middle of each agave row just for other things to grow in there. And even if they don't grow other stuff on purpose, they're leaving that land alone for whatever has a chance to thrive there to do so, right? Yeah. And even them, they were telling us about some of the complexities they're going through. And I know this is not part of the question, specifically nectar, but I think it's interesting to see some of the agricultural complications in the whole context of agave. They were telling us that a bunch of people, they decided to go into barley in that area. They started to plant barley for the beer industry instead of their agave for pulque. And at the beginning, they thought they were making more money, but the land will get so depleted by using barley that then in the fourth year, their yields were tiny. So they were spending a lot of money in fertilizers. And I mean, this is interesting to me because it seems that heritage, like, you know, to plant your pulque plants, it's a long-term investment.
Sure.
It's a long-term strategy to have a healthy relationship with your land, whereas the others seem that they're a little bit more short-lived. At least in the case of barley, that was confirmed to us. In the case of monoculture of Blue Weber, I personally do not have enough information to claim so.
So, you know, I to actually pull that idea back to the original concept, right? The original question about the environment. You know, I hesitate in the same way that I hesitate to say to anybody, you know, don't drink Blue Weber monoculture tequila, because realistically, if we're trying to resolve worldwide demand, that's the only way to do it. But I do very much champion the idea of, okay, there's going to be that, but then let's make sure that we don't lose sight of these small producers who are doing things in a far more sustainable way. And we do that by consuming their agave spirits. And I think you could say the same, at least I would say the same thing about agave nectar and agave syrup. I think it's unrealistic to expect that in terms of using sweeteners to make cocktails, that bartenders shouldn't use the commercially made agave nectar. Realistically, but I think if we start seeing more people move toward, it's just even some small 1%, 2% people moving toward using this kind of heritage agave nectar, not only do you get something that I think is more interesting, but you also are supporting these families who right now might need that support, because otherwise they might move to barley because it's a short-term answer.
Yes. And I also, you know, I haven't had access to many cocktail experts in my life, but every time I meet one of them that I really respect, they're really trying to honor the spirit that is in their cocktail. And I think that this is another way, this is another tool to really honor the traditions, the places, and the spirits that are in your cocktail.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just...
Great. So now, for all the bartenders who are in, where can they get this, Chava?
In Mexico City. That's the first answer. The second answer is we're gonna hide 100 bottles around Chapultepec. We still don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. I'm very nervous.
And we don't know because we don't know anybody that is commercializing this currently. But we have some.
Yeah, we have some, and I saw some at Rare Tea Cellar. What I'm pretty sure is that at Rare Tea Cellar in Chicago a while back. But in terms of getting it in bulk to be used in bars, I haven't seen it yet, and I hope that changes. But I also hope that in the same way that we see bartenders and agave enthusiasts running down to Mexico to get spirits, you know, these trips we took weren't so far away. To the place we make it.
And now we're so far away from Mexico City.
Exactly. So, you know, the next time, if you're a Gringax bartender and you're heading to Mexico to visit the men and women who make heritage agave spirits, man, take a detour for a day, maybe 2 days, and go visit these families and come back with this amazing syrup. There's limits. Depending on what state you live in, there are limits to how much you can bring back for spirits, but I don't know of any state that's limiting how much agave nectar you can bring back.
Yeah, I mean, this last time that I traveled, they asked me, I think it was American, if I had any food products that I had packaged myself. Just need to make them look like you didn't package them yourself. And I think you'll be good.
There you go. Okay. I think that's a wrap then, Chava.
I think that's a wrap indeed, Señor Lu. It was a delightful breakfast we had today at the Waffle House. Thanks.
Adios. Pronto.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lu Bank and Chava Peribán. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.